sir, and welcome to Cosmophilia, You Belong Here, your 2015 annual reading. I am starting all these readings with some story of the past, how you got to be in this place you think of as here, what here is, and what its properties are. And I would say that it is safe to say that the main environment of your life that you're living now goes back about 6 to 7 years when Pluto arrived in your opposite sign, Capricorn. Pluto through the 7th is a big transit. Pluto is one of the original gods of change. And your 7th house is your house of relationships. And like several other signs, but then unlike any other sign, you have been going through a period of pretty much unprecedented reshifting and shuffling of all of your relationships, and that includes your relationship to your environment. The 7th is the, let's say it is the total reality field that you occupy that is seemingly extrinsic to yourself. It is the outside world, the people in the outside world, and it is also a direct extension of yourself. This is a thing often forgotten, but the entire chart is an extension of yourself, and the houses tell us where things manifest, how they manifest, where you are likely to look at them in the complete environment of your life that is known as you. And the 7th is two main things. It is the most tangible description of the environment that you live in, and it's also a tangible description of your relationships. And you have Capricorn on this house. Capricorn is a sign that values stability. It is the sign ruled by Capricorn, and so there is supposed to be a measure of predictability and a measure of structure involved in your relationships and your environment, and you like it that way. This is partly compensation for the changing nature of your sign. Now, your sign is a cardinal sign, but it is the sign ruled by the moon. So there is a cyclical factor that is always at work in your life. And it seems that one of the ways that you make up for that cyclical factor, for that sensation of being in an environment of constant change, is by also building stability and structure around you. And it is that process of building external structure that has been at once challenging to get anything to stay put, to work well, to maintain its sense of order. And at the same time, if you study your life, study the environment that you occupy, you may notice that there has been quite a bit of, building that you have accomplished in this time. Pluto, in whatever manifestation it takes, is often going to deliver the message do or die. And in Capricorn, it is saying that you have an ongoing need to revise your concept of structure and to keep on building and then restructuring and then building and restructuring until you get it right and some form of stasis is accomplished. Now, for someone who values safety, values security, who values some measure of predictability, even though you're not all that predictable, this is challenging. And yet, at the same time, I think you know that it's been necessary. If you consider your life up until, let's say, 2008, when Pluto arrived in Capricorn, and think of all the ways in which you perceived yourself as stuck. And then in the post-2008 era, one thing we could say for sure is that you were not stuck. So much was changing that stuck is not the appropriate word for it. Other people may have been resistant to change. You know that you had no choice but to initiate and go through, follow through with, and fully experience this whole journey, this whole process. And in 2015, there is a shift in that process. It may be a subtle shift, it may be an overt shift, and that shift involves another transit that is equally meaningful, though somewhat later breaking news. This one takes hold in 10 and 11. It fully takes effect in 2011, and that is the transit of Uranus over your midheaven. Midheaven being the 10th sign from yours, in your case, that's Aries. And this, too, has had the sensation of constant, nonstop, absolutely must revise, change, experiment with, invent your professional life. That is to say, your vocation, your chosen occupation. And the thing about that chosen occupation for you is that in a way that is distinct from all of the other signs of the zodiac, you must project yourself 100% into what you do in order to succeed. Now, there are amazing success stories by people in every sign of the zodiac. Moon sign, sun sign, rising sign. It is not one sign that predicts one's success. However, in your case, the need, at least from a theoretical standpoint, reading the astrology, the need to become what you do with totality that would upset some people, because most people want Sunday off. Most people want to stop their work at night. You understand that you must become what you do, do it at all times, and that your full self and sense of identity must be projected into this thing that you want to succeed at if you really want to succeed. You have other options. And it may be that you don't quite have to go so far, but I think it is safer to err on the side of giving it your all, words we hear frequently spoken, words that we hear thrown around a bit. What does it mean to give it your all? For how long? Well, for you, it's a thing that you've done pretty much since you were conscious. You are fortunate to have this alignment as well. It's harder for people who have to ask themselves what they wish they were or what the thing that they identify the most with. And for you, it doesn't really matter. What you find yourself doing is what you are. What you are is what you find yourself doing. And it is easy for you to find direction. And you may think, well, if that's easy, then what's hard? Well, I assure you, hard is much harder. The thing that's required is sincerity, absolute sincerity, very high initiative, and the willing to risk yourself on what you do. You are your reputation. You don't have some Chinese wall between who people perceive you as and who you are. You're not projecting some visage or some kind of fictional entity into your 10th house. You are taking full command and control of your existence, and this is not only a creative act, it is a self-creative act. And since late 10, early 11, mid 10, early 11, you have had a planet there which has been something of a disruptive element, an inventive element, and something that has, much like Pluto, going through your seventh, assured you that you can take nothing for granted. And so while on the one hand, you've had to rise to many challenges, rise above many challenges, you've had to meet confrontation directly, you've had to adapt to an environment that was highly unpredictable, except in that there would be constant change in that environment. And now, with Uranus in your 10th house, which goes back to a couple of years after Pluto arrived in one of these two most important houses in any chart, you have had to basically juggle your own self-invention and invention of your mission along with your self-invention in an environment of constant change. Now, that might seem like it's twice the challenge. I would think of it differently. Rather than being twice the challenge, it is a perfectly synchronized, harmonized challenge. There is a certain elegance to the fact that everything around you is changing and that you have been put in a position where you have to reinvent yourself over and over again. So this little story of the past is not really the past at all, because this transit is still active. We could go back much further, but I think that for practical purposes, this is exactly far enough. And from that point forward, from that point in 2008 forward, and then accelerating greatly starting in about 2011, you could take absolutely nothing for granted about the work you do, about who you are, about what you want. And you were and remain a changing environment within a changing environment. So there's a bit of cosmic perfection there. What changes in 2015 is that this process of Uranus and Pluto, which is has been culminating since early 2012, and reaches its kind of final peak in March of 2015, a total of 7 events. It seemed like it would never end, right? 7 events of any one astrological transit is a lot. It's the first time I've ever seen a 7-event transit. Apparently, these Uranus-Pluto squares always happen 7 times. Or at least at this approximate phase of history, that's a common occurrence. Now, they don't happen that often. The whole Uranus-Pluto cycle ranges from 120 to 160 years, and it's been approximately 50 years since the conjunction, which took place in Virgo. Many of you reading or listening were born in the 60s with the Uranus-Pluto conjunction exact, and now that cycle has reached a flourishing point, a point of maximum traction and excellent momentum. And after March, the square begins to separate. It's been hanging around in the approximately same pattern for about 3 years. And now, when it separates, a whole new phase of this cycle begins. And this is kind of like the phase of there's a certain plateau that you've reached. And it's almost as if by March, anything that could possibly have happened will have happened. And you've had most of the surprises, most of the upheavals are indeed well behind you. And now you have the advantage of having some, if not predictability, pattern recognition, within this extremely chaotic environment, but it's starting to make sense. The big picture is starting to make sense. And you're seeing that much of what has been torn down is has happened to create space for you to do what I will call your real work. And there's no doubt that should you heed the calling of Uranus in the 10th and Pluto in the 7th, you have real work to do, and you have accomplished quite a bit of real work that you have set out for yourself, but you have come nowhere near a point where that's done, where you got a long way to go, a lot to accomplish. It's just unlikely to feel so bizarrely uphill all the time, as far as I can reckon. Now, the challenge with these outer planet transits, one really big challenge, is that they represent events, people, missions, developments on a scale that is not easily recognized by who we might call the little man. The little man is the person who has no real ambition, who has no desire to achieve something, or is unlikely to think thoughts that they think are thoughts that could in some way benefit others. It's generally a, you know, a perception of oneself as a small, meaningless thing, and therefore needing to just basically follow instructions and not dare too much. This astrology that you've got is very daring, and you have repeatedly come close to succeeding at a kind of perfect reinvention of yourself in an environment that is very difficult for most people to grasp. The times we're in are amazing times if you feel as if there's some purpose to your life, if you feel as if that it is worth rising to challenges. These are amazing times to be alive. If you don't feel that way, they are frightening times to be alive. And to allay that fear, it's always possible to just kind of keep yourself distracted and preoccupied. And it's possible that you have done that. But I would say even if your goal has been to be preoccupied and be distracted and to just kind of pick up on the glamour side of all the technology, to pick up on the shiny exterior, that despite yourself, you have had to make adaptations that have required you to grow, to become, to change, to invent, to take chances. Now, in the specific story of 2015, a couple of things become obvious. First of all, there is a series of breakthroughs that begins to happen. And the third week of March, well, all of March really, is likely to be incredibly interesting as the sun completes its roundel of the seasons and ends its run through Pisces with a powerful solar eclipse that happens only 1/4 of a degree away from your midheaven angle in Pisces. And this is, for you, an invitation to do one last major behind-the-scenes self-reinvention. The self-reinvention needs to be based on a vision that you have for yourself, an idea that you have for yourself, some concept of the direction in which we might say you want to grow old. What does it mean to you to grow into full maturity doing the thing that you want to do? What is that thing that you want to do? And more than that, more than an activity or goal, is the concept of a self that you want to be, which needs to be a kind of a clone of what you really are. So if you take what you really are and you extend it to its full logical outgrowth, to its full conclusion, what is that? What does that look like? And the events of the early spring have the ability to set you on a trajectory to become that thing that you know in your heart that you actually are. And so there is an acceleration point where you very rapidly cross a remaining gap and meet yourself on the other side of that gap in a much more complete form. It's not that you transform so much, but rather that you acquire the pieces and the elements of and encounter a kind of a rapid acceleration strand of your own DNA, and very quickly become in a much more obvious way that which you know you are on the inside. Now, there are other eclipses in 2015. They all are hovering around the same zone of your chart. They are hovering around the mental-emotional line, the line between the third and the fourth, and the vision-achievement line, the line between the ninth and the tenth. And so all year long, there's a kind of a toggling back and forth between idea and emotional response, and then vision and achievement, vision and becoming. This kind of, it's really, the word achievement doesn't really do the job. It is more about a flowering. It's more about completion, really. Now, the thing that is going to be your guiding star through all of this, it's not the transits I've described. They kind of live in the background. The thing that guides you, that describes the kind of highest expression of your intention, is your ability to organize space, to hold space, and to tend the creative flame. The metaphor throughout all of these is the metaphor of a hearth. It is a central organizing principle in a home. Homes organized around hearths are very nice places. Homes organized around kitchens are very nice places. If I were an architect, I would start every architectural design with the kitchen and then arrange the entire building around the kitchen, because that's how we live our lives. The kitchen is always the central place in a home, conceptually, spiritually, functionally. The kitchen is the main office of a home. It's where just about everything happens, including this very important thing known as food, the bottom line of existence in many ways. And so the planet is Vesta, the brightest asteroid, and the message is hold space, organize space, and tend the flame at the center of the space. So work with this metaphor however you want to do it. I would say that all manner of flame metaphors, whether it be imagery or actually going out and making fire, whether it be tending a hearth within your own home, whether it be focusing on the life that you have in your kitchen, which is always an evolutionary, highly progressive thing for Cancerians to do, is to spend as much time in the kitchen as possible. It is very good for your success. It will be very, very good for your success in the coming four seasons. Work with those central metaphors. Second, the idea of love is extremely powerful in your charts this year. It shows up in several different ways. And it's kind of unusual the way that it is doing this. But the question that seems to emerge from the whole thing is, what are the conditions that you place on love? What are the conditions that you place on unconditional love? And what about love is it for you that has a way of becoming a kind of a Pandora's box? The most important thing you can do is to not be afraid of these possibilities, because fear will beget challenges that are kind of off the menu. They're not really necessary, but rather understanding your own emotional tendencies and your own emotional insecurities will be very helpful for you. And making sure that, particularly in the work that you do, that you are, however dedicated to success that you might be, and I think that it is healthy for people who are not robber barons to be dedicated to success, and especially people who are artist types, writer types, who are artisans of some kind, which it's likely that you are or that you want to be, rather than being like a Wall Street guy. Now, maybe you are a Wall Street guy. I've got a few of them in my reading audience, but it's more likely that you are a smith of some kind, that you see yourself as someone who makes things, as you see yourself as someone whose inspiration is inspiration, not accumulation. And for those people whose inspiration is inspiration, not accumulation, the drive to success is very important to harness. And despite how much you might harness that, and I would suggest you harness it a lot, that the impulse to service be the thing that you focus on the most. The way in which your achievements serve others, the way in which the things that you make serve others, the way in which your success itself serves others. Recognize that fact, that for you to be successful will benefit many people around you. It is the exact opposite of the greed model, the exact opposite of the success is my own thing and it's the thing that that I have and all this greed is mine. I just stumbled upon the Wikipedia pages of the Walton family, the Walmart people, and it's astonishing. I mean, I found myself thinking something I don't usually think very much is, what does someone do with $35 billion? What human being, except for the most creative human being, can actually do something with $35 billion? That is a challenge. And while you may not have $35 billion, your success is some equivalent of that, because you have the power to spread success around you as you grow and as you become what it is that you are becoming. Okay, now, about that Pandora's box of love thing. The question is, what happens when you love passionately? I can't answer that question, but I can tell you that the antithesis to anything negative that might happen when you love passionately is to love in an abiding way. Abiding is kind of like living with. It's coexistence. It is to consciously endeavor to be with. And so passion is beautiful. Passion is one thing. Passion is important. Passion drives many people. But of itself, it is not a particularly sustaining force for most people. I would propose that for you, the sustaining force is a bit more like Vesta. It is the abiding with force. It is the holding space force. It is the being with force of life. And there is a patience to that. There is a devotional element to that. And that patience and that devotion are the very thing to cultivate, to create what you might think of as success in love and success in your ability to relate to others. Choose people who are the abiding love types of people. Choose people who have the tendency to devotion. There are a lot of beautiful, sexy, interesting, creative people who don't have that tendency. You may have interesting experiences with them, but to fulfill your need for home, which is all over your life going back to the beginning and certainly a story told in the planets and the stars in this coming year of your life, develop that abiding quality and look for the interesting people who have that quality and who are willing to share that, to turn that energy onto you, to express their willingness to see you through whatever it is that you are experiencing, what you are going through, and focus your energy on your willingness to see them through their developments, their changes, their experiences of becoming. Remembering that for the most part, life when actually lived is a process of change, and that most of our relationship models are rather unfriendly to change. They're unfriendly to the development of who a person is, and that is another way of saying that they are basically set up to fail if the individuals in those experiences grow and change and succeed. Kind of a crazy thing about our relationship models. And I would say that this is one really meaningful thing that your professional endeavors, your vocational endeavors, have in common with your relational endeavors, remembering that success and that work and that creativity is all relational, and that you are someone who does not separate your identity from your calling, that this abiding, space-holding, hearth-tending, tending in general, honoring the creative force, honoring the creative flame, honoring the sexual flame that is at the center of every person, is the way to encourage your life, your world, your experience on this planet to grow and to flourish in a time when that appears to be highly likely to happen. That is what I have to say to you in this being part one. We'll return with a kind of a new take on the same theme, a new approach to this chart. We'll look at some other houses. I've looked mainly in the first half at the angular houses. I've looked at house mainly 1, 7, and 10. There's nine other houses, and we'll look at a few more of them in the next section. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you in a digital instant.